Welcome to this special episode of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. The guest for this special episode is about to undergo a Supreme Court case in USPSA terms, and he's been around for quite a while, mid-90s, I believe, but we'll get that confirmed. He is a section coordinator, and if you would, join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Mark Stamper. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well. Nice to be here, Dave.
Thanks for coming on. If you would, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Sure. Again, my name is Mark Stamper. Everybody in Atlanta knows me as Hat Man, hence the hat. And so I've been shooting, like you introduced me, but I started off in the mid-90s with USPSA back in the early days. One of those guys who actually has a five-digit USPSA number. Been involved with shooting in and around Atlanta very heavily for about the last 8 years, and have started off just shooting and then got into match directing at one of the local clubs. Got my CRO status and worked several nationals, and then I had the opportunity to run for section coordinator for the state of Georgia, and was lucky enough to win that office.
There's a whole lot to unpack there, and we will over the course of the conversation. But as you're well aware, I like to hit you with all the hard questions right up front, make you sweat a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, number one, favorite movie.
Favorite movie, Hunt for Red October.
Great movie. Now, have you read the book and watched the movie?
I have read the book and watched the movie. I can quote the movie pretty much, but I cannot quote the book.
But I feel like the book and the movie were pretty close, pretty similar.
They were. They did a really good job of with the technical side of stuff, you know, for like scenery in the background and things. Tom Clancy was really known for the first like third of his book about laying all this groundwork, technical wise and character wise, before you got into the really fun part of the book. And, as far as what transpired in the movie and the book, I agree. It was pretty similar, which is rare.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, some of the best acting you'll ever find in a movie.
Well, you know, you got Sean Connery. How can you go bad with that?
Scott Glenn.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? The guy who just shot somebody. One of the brothers,
I know who you're talking about.
Can't think of his name, but some really
being old.
Exactly. Need to get more sleep.
Yep.
Okay. I have learned that, not many people read anymore. You're an elderly gentleman like myself. Mm-hmm. So you've probably read a book or two. What's your favorite book?
Be honest with you, the last book I really read was, Clear and Present Danger by Tom Clancy. I do a lot of, I'm a very propeller head, a lot of geeky tech stuff. And so a lot of my information that I get and read is in digital formats. I get a lot of information that way, but as far as an actual page turner, Clear and Present Danger was the last book I actually read.
Okay, so you're a big Tom Clancy fan.
Yeah, I like his stuff.
Is there any other author that you like that's in that genre?
I hadn't really got into a lot of that genre. I did read the Hunger Games series, and I was surprised. You're talking about, you know, we talked about how Red October was similar to the book, the movie, and the Hunger Games series was... they didn't stray real far from that either, especially the Mockingjay books. So that was pleasant to see. I guess that's why they had to do it in two movies.
Okay. Yeah, that would make sense. Okay. All right. Number three, I don't know if you're into superheroes or not. If you are, who's your favorite superhero? If not, who's your favorite historical figure?
So I am a big Marvel fan, but really my biggest superhero that I like is Superman. And there was a line in one of the Kill Bill movies where David Carradine was talking about Superman, that all the other superheroes have to put on a costume to become the superhero. And Superman has to put on a costume to become normal to everybody else around him. He's always Superman. And I dug on that. And I always liked Superman, but that just really solidified my understanding of the depth of character that Superman is.
I've watched the Kill Bill series of movies, love them, but I don't even recall that. I probably have to go back and watch them again.
That was in the Kill Bill Volume 2 when David Carradine and Emma's character got together when she first learned about her daughter still being alive. I'm also a huge Quentin Tarantino fan.
Oh, yeah, that I get. I mean, he has some of the best movies out there, so I get that. Yeah. I love the fact that he tries to interject himself in the movies too, somewhere.
Yep, little Alfred Hitchcock homage there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, number 4, favorite gun, favorite caliber. They don't have to be married together. So you could enjoy a Glock and 50 cal could be your favorite caliber.
Sure, sure. That's actually, when I was pondering this, I was like, this is actually an easier question than I thought to answer. My favorite gun is my Norinco single stack pre-band 45 caliber pistol. I'm an old guy. I can't shoot iron sights any very well anymore, but I love that gun. Actually sold the original one I had due to, let's just say, a poor marriage choice. And decided a few years ago that I wanted it back. So found one on the interwebs and paid to have it duplicated, and love that gun. It'll shoot quarter groups at 25 yards with the right, shooter who can see the sights right, but it just groups like crazy. My favorite caliber, 9mm. I shoot a ton of 9mm, in competition. And I just like 9mm. It's just an easy round. You can do a lot with it. You can run it all the way up to, open category division and down to mouse farts and for steel challenge.
Mouse farts. Okay. Hopefully I don't recognize that sound. I'm just saying.
The gun goes, unlike a squib load where it's like poof, it's actually like bang versus bang.
Okay, let's go back to this Norinco pre-band 45.
Sure.
What is a pre-band 45?
All right, so Norinco's come from China, okay? The U.S. government in the mid-90s, put a ban on any firearms coming from China. So anything that was already in country, in the United States, was allowed to continue to stay in the United States and be sold, bought and sold. But anything after that was not allowed to. They've relaxed that ban a few years back, but the Norincos that are in the mid-2000s that you can find here and there do not have the build quality of the pre-ban.
So you're saying there's a Chinese firearm product out there that's actually good?
So yeah, surprisingly. What makes these pre-bans so solid is that the frames and slides are actually milled out of railroad steel, railroad tie steel.
Whoa.
It's a very hard steel. The gun will rattle, but it'll group like nobody's business.
Okay. Wow. I was about to tell you lost all credibility until you said railroad steel.
It's really surprising. Everybody who's handled that gun and shot it goes, if you ever decide to sell it again, let me know.
Wow. Now, what was the cost difference from the original that you had to the one? He's already laughing.
it was not pretty. The original gun back in the 90s when I bought that gun and had a gunsmith probably cost me maybe $400, maybe, for all of it. When I had it redone, the gun alone cost me $5, and then I put another $6 to $7 100 in it to with gunsmithing and parts. So I've got, I almost probably quadrupled the price to get it rebuilt. But this is that gun that, you know, I should never have sold it, should have gotten rid of the wife at the time. And, you know, and so it's not going anywhere. It'll be I shoot it occasionally in, you know, some matches, some USPSA hit factor matches, but, you know, it's not going anywhere. It's, I love that gun.
So I assume with the way you're talking, as openly as you're talking, that marriage has dissolved.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Quite a while ago.
Okay. All right. Now you let it slip that you are also a professional chef or have been. I don't know if you are or have been. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Ken Cobb the other day.
Okay.
What is your favorite dish or meal to prepare?
Oh, great question. You know, I hate to kind of mimic what Ken said, but, you know, I've been in this business so long that I like to just be able to go into a kitchen and see what's there and create something. You know, I have worked everything from mom and pop restaurants to corporate chef to, you know, a chef in big hotels, you know, and had my own catering company. So I'm pretty much well-versed in everything and I like cooking everything. Now I will tell you, people really like my ribeye steak, you know, and I have several people who's like, if you're cooking steaks, you know, invite me over because I'll rather have your steak than a steakhouse steak.
Okay. So you should not have brought up steak because this is probably going to take up now our entire conversation, steak. But is there really any better cut than a ribeye? I say no. I'm in the corner of no.
I agree with you. I don't think there's anything better than a well-marbled, grain-fed ribeye. There's just so many parts of that steak that are good, you know, and it's, I mean, how can you go wrong with a steak that's also in its big form can be prime rib? How do you go wrong with that?
Right. Yeah. That is by far, I mean, it's going to be the most tender. It's got the right amount of fat in it. It's so the flavor is great. Yep. I mean, when I was a kid, I would douse my steaks in steak sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I loved steaks, but up until about in my 30s, I always put steak sauce on there. And then finally, I started cooking them right. I started selecting them right. And I was like, now I don't use steak sauce ever for any steak.
Yeah.
You're just covering up the flavor of it. Now, if it's not the best steak, I'll put some steak sauce on it. But otherwise, I mean, if it's cooked right and it's a good slab of meat, mm-hmm. Just insulting this poor steak.
I use three ingredients on my steak. Coarse ground kosher salt, fresh ground black pepper, and granulated garlic. That's it. I don't do anything else. It's all I put on them. Good heat, good sear, good grill marks. Let it rest, you know, 4 to 5 minutes, and comes out a perfect medium rare, and everybody, you know, loves them. I love it. It's my favorite cut.
The only thing else I've ever added, on occasion, I'll add onion flakes.
Yeah, I've seen that. But, you know, grilled onions, caramelized grilled onions is a really great accompaniment to a steak, too. Because that sort of caramely sweet from the onion is a real good balance to that umami steak flavor.
I just prefer crispy onion, so I don't do the onions and mushroom stuff. And I don't do fungus. I always tell people if I wanted fungus, I'd suck on my toes. So there you go. People just learned more than they ever wanted to know about me. Okay, Mark. Those were all of the fun, hard questions. Now we're going to get into the meat of the topic.
Oh, good. Now I can relax.
Yeah, now you can relax. Now it's easy. Now it's just a conversation. It's not an interrogation. All right. Did you grow up in Georgia?
I did not. I was originally born in Louisville, Kentucky. My dad's job took him all over the place. I moved to Atlanta over probably 35 years ago, from Charleston, South Carolina. And before that, I lived in Miami, Florida. And that was just a few places of a long list of places I've lived.
So once you got into Area 6, you just haven't left?
Pretty much haven't left.
Okay. Well, Louisville, Kentucky, though, the time we're growing up, that's still pretty rural and southern in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did you grow up with guns?
Yeah. You know, my dad had guns. His dad had guns. They hunted. My dad grew up in, very rural part of Kentucky. Actually one of the first guns that, he let me shoot was a, Octagon barreled Marlin 22 pump action. That was just a really fun little gun to shoot.
There were a lot of fun guns like that back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so when was the first time you shot a pistol?
Probably not until I moved to Atlanta. My roommate, I was living with, he had a pistol. We would go to the local gun range and stand in the lane and shoot. And, I started shooting that way. That's how I got introduced to USPSA. The range that we were shooting at, happened in there one night. And they said, you can't shoot. The range is rented for this competition. So I started talking to some of the guys, who were waiting to go in and shoot their stage. And they just told me about what it was all about. And, next thing I know, I'm shooting USPSA.
You got sucked in and you never got out.
Got sucked in and never really got out.
It's like that whirlpool. Once you're in it, you're not getting out of it.
Nope.
And what year was that, Mark?
That was 1994.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even find this sport till 2018. And I'm probably not much of an age difference from you. I'm 57.
I just turned 60 this past June.
And I'll be, okay, so you'll be 61, I'll be 58. We're right around 3 years apart. I didn't find it till 2018. So good for you.
Yeah. My first gun was a Glock 19 that I shot for a little while, and it was a fun gun. Glocks just don't fit my hand right as far as the natural point of aim, and it's having to do that weird wrist cock. And so back then was when the first talks about banning high capacity mags came along. And so I went to a local gun show, traded my Glock for the first iteration of the Norinco, and shot that for about almost 2 years.
Okay. What? So did you start shooting? How long did you shoot the Norinco then?
So I said I shot the Glock for about a year, maybe.
Yeah.
And then the Norinco for about another 2 years.
Okay.
And then I took a hiatus. Again, we talked about that marriage thing. And I got back in, like I said, about, since 2024, like 2014, 2015, okay. I got back in.
Okay. In those 3 years, did you get your RO or do any match directing back then?
So I did get my RO cert back then. And that was when I said originally got my RO cert. So I wasn't doing any match directing at the time, but I was, actively ROing for the club that I was shooting at. And, I would go do some outdoor matches. There wasn't a lot of outdoor clubs at the time, but I did, there's a couple places in Atlanta that were doing outdoor matches, and I was ROing there as well.
Okay. So what was it, about 96, 97 then when the last match you shot?
Around there, roughly.
Okay.
Late 97.
Okay. So late 97 to 2014, maybe 2015.
Mm-hmm.
At what point, so when you're getting close to 2014 or you're in 2014, what made you go, I'm going to go back and shoot USPSA?
Started watching Shooting USA on cable TV. and on the Outdoor Channel, and was like, man, I missed this. And so, you know, internet's your friend, got out there, started looking around, and come to find out that the club that I was that I shot with back in the mid 90s was still in existence and still shooting. So I found out what range they were shooting at, went and watched for a couple batches, come to find out that a couple of the guys who were in, who were shooting that night, those few nights that I visited, were OGs when I was in the club back in the 90s and were still shooting.
Wow. That's pretty impressive that they were still, you know, what is 20 years later, yeah, they're still there.
One of the guys is, he doesn't shoot as often. His name's Marty Rubin. He's probably 84, still shoots a 2011, you know, limited gun. And, you know, he's not the fastest in the world, but he will drive some tacks.
Wait a minute. He's 84 years old and he's still shooting irons.
Yep.
All right. I tip my hat to the man.
I do too. Every time I mean, I see
these him. These are reading glasses. They're not, and I don't need them. I see my front door just fine, but it's 20 feet away.
Multifocus. Yeah.
That's why I can't shoot irons. I'm like, I can't quite get everything in focus.
I hear you.
All right. So when you came back in 2014, 2015, we'll just call it 2014, just okay, for that way we don't have to worry about sure what year it actually was. Were you shooting your Norinco still?
I wasn't, because I had sold it. So I didn't have that. So I had bought, was talking to some guys, you know, looking at different guns, and at the gun range that they were shooting at, they had a Walther PPQ, the Q5 polymer frame is what they had. And so I bought that and got, you know, went online, ordered holsters, ordered extra mags, you know, got everything I needed to shoot that. Put an optic on it because I have old man eyes and optics were allowed. And, you know, was shooting that in, at the time, carry optics hadn't come in yet. So it was considered an open gun, even though it didn't have a compensator and I was shooting regular 9mm. So I was shooting open minor. And, you know, was having a lot of fun with it.
Okay. Now, how long did you, I see you're shooting PCC now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So how long did you stay an open minor, or did you move to carry optics as soon as that was a division?
Actually, I kind of stumbled into PCC. There were a couple of guys who were shooting PCC at the club in 2014. So I was like, that's pretty cool. How I stumbled into it was the optic failed on my Walther. So I had to send it back. Well, I didn't have another gun. So I discovered I could get a PCC pretty cheap, you know? And so I started shooting that while I was waiting for the optic to be returned, and never really looked back.
Okay. So that must have been what, 20, I'm trying to remember if it was 2016 or 2017.
Right around there, yeah.
Yeah, that PCC became a thing. Okay, mm-hmm. So you've been shooting it ever since. Do you shoot any pistol anymore?
Like I said, occasionally I'll pull the 45 out, and it's kind of funny. I'll pull the 45 out when I go, dang it, I needed to load 9mm, and I don't have any loaded, so I'm going to pull the 45 out and go shoot that.
Okay. Now I'll know. Now I know if I ever see Mark Stamper shooting his 45, someone forgot to load some 9mm.
Somebody's, yep, I did not load ammo.
Guilty.
Did not get on the press.
Someone procrastinated.
Yep.
2014, you're back in. How long did it take you to determine or decide that I'm going to renew my RO? I'm going to get my RO again.
It was probably maybe a year into it. So by 2015, I decided I wanted to get my RO again. You know, so I had to, obviously I had to go back through RO school because it had been so long. You know, what was also interesting is when I went to put my membership in, they said, you already have a member number. When I went online to put my member, to renew my, to do my membership for USPSA. So I called the office and they go, yeah, we've got your original number. Do you want it back? I'm like, well, sure. Yeah. and so, like I said, then like I said, in 2015, I decided to go get my RO cert again. And so went and did class at Riverbend Gun Club here in, outside of Atlanta and recerted. And probably about 18 months after that, I went for my CRO.
Oh, okay. So you didn't wait long at all and just upgraded everything.
Yep.
At what point did you start match directing when you got back?
So the... I probably was shooting and ROing at GPSL, which was, by the way, is the very first USPSA club in the state of Georgia. Their number is GA01. They're still around 35-something years later. And so the guy who was match directing at the time, I would get there early. I would help him build stages. And he started grooming me. He started telling me that he was looking to retire. He'd been doing it for like 4 years. David Darden was his name. And so he was looking to step down from, you know, match directing. And so he started grooming me for that position. So when his tenure finished, they did a new election and I was elected to take over his position as match director. And I did that for 4 years, almost a little over 4 years.
Now, how much had you worked with them before taking over? Like, did you get any experience prior to?
Oh yeah. I mean, he worked with me on, you know, designing stages, you know, building stage, actually putting them on the ground, building them. Well, we were an indoor, this is an indoor range. So, you know, putting them on the rails.
okay.
You know, teaching me about how to make sure that all your shots were downrange, you know, developing stages for an indoor range, is way different than doing stuff for outdoor berms and outdoor bays. Cause you, well, up until recently, everything was always to the back berm. There are some ranges now here in Atlanta that actually have tactical walls about a third of the way from the berm coming up, about a third of the way up. They have, tactical walls that you can now shoot 270 degrees, which opens up a lot of options as far as stage design.
And options for DQ.
Yeah. But you know, you now have, you know, you now have the ability to mimic to a certain degree an outdoor stage indoors.
Right. So yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. Which is really, really, really awesome. So like I said, he taught me a lot about that. That was my first exposure to practice score as well. You know, my previous exposure, you know, back in the '90s, everything was paper. You know, we had to do the math on a calculator and, you know, someone took it home and you didn't know where you were as far as how you finished in that match till the following match when they posted up, you know, the computer printout on that from the dot matrix printer.
Right. Which, God forbid, if you don't know what a dot matrix printer is, bless your heart.
Yeah.
But also then, Mark, I mean, there was no pre-registration for matches locally. Nope. I mean, you just had to show up.
You just showed up.
Okay. So was there ever an issue where people showed up and the match filled up and then they had to go home?
For GPSL at the time, you know, we would let it get up to about 30 shooters. You know, indoor, and took a long time, but the range was, you know, we were paying the range pretty decent. So they really didn't argue that much. And you know, so, but you know, there were other times that, you know, we'd have 10 shooters show up, you know, and we were in the hole, you know, far as what the range was wanting and what we took in. And, right. You know, it was tough. You know, before pre-registration for practice score pre-registration, it was just walk up, pay your money, you know, and shoot. And it was tough. It was tough to cover the nut that the range wanted and to be able to afford, you know, consumables. It was a real challenge, you know, then.
How have things changed? Completely different now?
Oh yeah. The, about 2 years into my 4 year run, the gentleman and his wife who were, who was the treasurer and his wife was quartermaster, he had, some medical issues and ended up passing away from those, problems with diabetes. So his wife, moved to Texas to be with her kids. So at that point, you know, the whole match was pretty much on me. They weren't there anymore. Luckily I had one of the shooters, had a real keen eye for stage design. He is still stage designing for GPSL to this day. And just an amazing stage designer, and stage builder. I would challenge him on any any of the guys who do national level stages. Some of his stuff beats those guys hands down. He does some challenges on indoor bays that you're going, how did we get to this? Where does this come from in his mind to be able to give us this sort of challenge on an indoor stage? And him and I ran the club by ourselves for pretty much 2 years. You know, I handled all the paperwork side of stuff, you know, posting stuff to USPSA, to practice score, setting up the match, doing all the tablets, all that. He did the stage designs and the stage builds. And we had volunteers who would come in on a real regular basis to help us, you know, build stages. And, you know, it was a great, great relationship that we have. We still do. I'm the treasurer for the club right now. I've stepped down as president. You know, we have new leadership in place. And I actually had to move to a new range. And that was a big challenge, you know, to find a new range. The place we were at decided that they wanted to up the rental.
Rent.
Yeah. And it was just way more than we could afford. You know, I would have had to charge $50 a shooter to cover that.
Wow.
It was ridiculously expensive. So started shopping around, and some fellow shooters helped me find, you know, where we are now. We're downtown Atlanta, which is unique. But we have two bays that we use at this indoor range. They have three bays total, so they can keep one bay open and generate income while we still do our match that we do the second, fourth Tuesdays of every month. We have our own Connex where all of our equipment is stored, and it's actually inside of a big garage that they have. It's attached to their building. So, you know, we're literally a match in a box, if you will.
Impressive.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we do 24 shooters, two squads of 12. And since probably May of last year, we have sold out every match since.
Nice.
And are on a wait list on most of those nights.
Very nice. And I assume that the range is very accommodating for you guys.
Yes, they love having us. There was a guy who was doing training classes for USPSA shooters, and he was also he's an air marshal for I'm not sure who does that the air marshals work for nowadays. I get confused, but so he would do air marshal training as well. And they kept saying, "Hey, we would love to have a USPSA match. We'd love to have a USPSA match in here." And he didn't have the ability or time to do it. And then serendipitously, you know, GPSL was needing a new home, and we were able to negotiate a good relationship and a good rate that they were happy with and we're happy with. And, you know, everything's been, we're very, very blessed to continue to have that relationship and have a great host range to work out of.
Now, what does GPSL stand for?
Originally, it stood for Gwinnett Practical Shooting League. But we're not in Gwinnett County, which is one of the counties in Georgia. So we changed the name to Georgia Practical Sporting League. Still kept the same name, same letters, but came up with something that was a little more fitting. So if we ever had to move again, you know, we're not having to, people go, well, you're not in Gwinnett. Why are you still calling yourself Gwinnett?
At what point, when you got back, did you start volunteering to help RO/CRO at major matches?
That was probably 4 years ago.
So about 2020-ish?
Yeah, right around there. Yeah, I'd say it's pretty accurate. Late 2019, fall of 2019.
Okay, so did you do any nationals in fall of 2019?
Yeah, the first major that I worked was the two-gun nationals at Talladega, at CMP Talladega. That was the first big match I've worked.
Wow, a two-gun.
Yep.
Okay, how was it? All right, well, tell me this then, because I don't know. You can educate me.
Okay.
What's the difference ROing a two-gun match versus a standard pistol USPSA or practical shooting match?
So outside of the Captain Obvious of its two guns, the biggest challenge is they use different targets for the different firearm that's being engaged. Okay. So when you're the two gun match for USPSA at that match was pistol and PCC. Okay. Which is kind of weird because you're shooting 9mm on both, but it was still two different guns. A lot of guys were shooting either limited guns or open guns for their pistol. And obviously everybody was on some form of PCC. So you had dump boxes you had to deal with. And, you know, you had to, there's a rule in place that if the gun wasn't locked back due to a bolt hold open scenario, the gun had to be put on safe before it could be dropped in the drop box. There's a lot of running involved. I think my step counter put me in over the 3 days that the match ran. I think I put in over 12 miles in steps.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. Go ahead.
When you said everyone had some form of PCC, I heard everybody had some form of PCP.
PCP. Yeah, that's right. PCP. It was because you didn't need to be on drugs to shoot that match. But PCC, yes. You know, so they had, I mean, there was everything from JPs to SIGs, MPXs to custom built, you know, stuff, CMMGs. You know, Palmetto State Arms, PCCs. That was just a large different selection of you know PCC rifles that were being used, carbines.
So since then, have you volunteered at nationals ever since?
I did the the two gun nationals. Then I've done three PCC slash open or PCC slash carry optics that have been at Talladega CMP Park where they run the nationals there.
Okay, then you would have RO'd me in 2020. No, 2021.
Probably, yeah.
2021. Because 2020 was the last time they did carry optics at Frostproof.
Okay.
And in 2021, it was carry optics and PCC.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So which stage, if you can remember, I mean, we're getting up there in years. So if you can remember, what stage were you running that year? Do you remember?
I think it was stage 12, I think.
So that would have been the middle section.
That would have been in B section.
Yep. Was it the one in the corner there?
No, it was a couple over. It was it was a medium field course. It was like 28 or 30 rounds, if I remember correctly. You know, I had the squad that I was, the RO squad that I was on was just awesome. The guy who was our CRO is now an RM and just really, really great guy. We're still in communication to this day.
Okay. So then you did 2022, 2023. Mm-hmm. And 2023 kind of brings us back to where we're going with all of this. So what match were you, which nationals were you volunteering at last year when we're about to get into this?
That was the Open PCC Nationals.
Okay. And then you were on a certain stage preparing to shoot when you got approached.
Yes.
Where were you in the order of shooting?
I was literally getting ready to go to the line.
So you were on deck.
Yeah, I was. Well, they had finished the shooter. They were scoring him, and I was going to get my PCC out of the bag. So I was literally getting ready to walk to the line.
Okay. And what happened?
So, you know, Troy comes rolling up in his golf cart at a pretty good clip. You know, I saw him coming. I didn't think he was coming to me directly. I know our squad, we got off about a 10, 15 minute late start. I don't know why we were running late, but we were. And I thought he was coming to fuss at the squad because we were behind. Needless to say, that wasn't the case. He came up and started giving me an earful about some posts that I had shared off of the Practical Shooting Insights Instagram page that I had shared on my Facebook page, calling into question some of the items about the current election and, you know, people who were able to see what was going on with the election inside at USPSA. And he started just berating me about, you need to take that stuff down. You know, that's the guy who put that stuff up. He's a dick. You know, I'm sorry for the colorful language. I'm just relating what
he
said.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. But you know, he's an asshole and you know, you shouldn't be associating with him and you need to take that stuff down. And if you don't, you know, do you want to shoot this? Do you want to continue shooting this match? He says, and on top of that, do you even want to, you know, RO this match? And in the same breath, he goes, you know what? I might not ever let you RO another nationals again if you don't take this stuff down. And I was slack-jawed. I was just like, you know, and in hindsight, you know, everybody goes, hindsight's perfect. You know, I would have loved to have said a whole litany of things to him. But at the time, I was in such shock. And this was in front of my squad. Several of the shooters heard what was going on. One of the shooters on my squad who was shooting early was Luigi Lee, who was running for president of USPSA at the time. And he was like almost standing next to me. And, you know, I had to ask my squad, can you put me down at the back of the, you know, at the bottom of the list? I'm in no position to shoot once he left. And all I could think to say to him at the time was, I'll think about it, you know? And I was just, my cage was rattled beyond words. You know, I actually, the 2-day match, I shot the worst I've ever shot in any match anywhere. You know, wow. It just completely destroyed my whole mindset.
Did you and Luigi have a conversation?
We did. You know, okay. he was like coaching me, talking, I don't want to say coaching, advising me on options that were available to me of how I should go about, you know, making certain people aware of what was going on. You know, the guys, some of the guys in my squad were on their phones. And by the end of day one, my phone was lighting up with friends of mine from Atlanta going, what the heck is going on? You know, I heard, you know, there was this Troy, you know, went off on you. You know, and that's how I got in touch with Practical Shooting Insights. One of my buddies, like, this guy wants to talk to you. So I had a conversation with, is it okay if I say his name?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That was Derek Lewis, who runs PSI. You know, Derek and I had a great conversation. You know, he gave me some pointers. You know, unfortunately, he was also one of those people that was banned. And he's like, look, man, he says, you need to try to get in front of this as best you can. Here's what you need to do, which actually coincided with the advice that I got from Luigi, you know, about writing a letter to the board. So I did put a letter together to the board, sent it off. You know, it was, I got one response back from Ted Murphy. Probably it was, we did 2 days of staff shoot. So it was probably the first day of competitor shoot. I got sort of a canned response. Thank you for, you know, sending this to us. You know, we appreciate it. You know, we'll hopefully we'll talk soon. I was like, okay, this is going nowhere. But you know, and that's when, and as I let some time pass and talked to some other people, and, you know, Ben Stoger reached out and said, hey man, I want to hear what's going on with this. Would you come on my podcast? I was like, sure, you know. And, you know, as time progressed, I learned that Troy did eventually come before the board under discipline, but received a 3-day suspension for him to serve whenever he chose, along with a write-up in his employee folder. And that was it. You know, he gets away with, basically he got away with, you know, threatening my hobby and the thing that I love to do, which is, you know, I love shooting, but also I really like ROing. I like, you know, working on the stage. And, you know, to threaten that from me I was just like, I can't let that go. And that's what got me into, you know, being one of the voices of what's going on with everything at USPSA Board of Directors.
So in all of your years, whether it be the 3 years you shot in the 90s or since 2014, have you ever heard of this happening to anybody else?
Prior to that, I had not heard about Troy blowing up on people. Obviously, I'd heard about Mike Foley and his antics.
Right.
But that was the first time that, you know, I had that sort of interaction with Troy. I had shared some emails with him on some stuff when I had some questions about calls, and he was very short and curt, you know, in his email replies. But, you know, he's sort of a gruff guy anyway, you know, just his general demeanor. And so I kind of blew that off of like, well, it's just Troy. But I had no idea. No one had ever told me that, you know, Troy had previous history of, you know, berating
type
other
of activity.
Yeah. And, right. And then once it happened, you know, I got an earful, and, you know, it's out there. If you wanted to learn of it, go Google it, you know, go check Derek's PSI page. You know, I'll let you research that. People can research that on their own.
They're going to have to go back like 600 posts though.
Well, yeah, he does. Do a lot. He puts out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. He and I have chatted behind the scenes about some things. So yeah, I don't mind his name being, I don't mind anybody's name being put out here. We're not mudslinging with anybody. We're just talking about facts here. So it doesn't matter to me. Right. Now you had also declined to go and talk to the board about the incident. Later, I know that Troy was going to be there. Mm-hmm. What was it specifically that, or was it just the whole attitude of the way things were being taken that gave you pause to go in front of the board?
The thing that gave me the biggest pause was when I learned that Troy would be there was going to be a part of that. And, you know, and I hate to compare what I was thinking to someone who's suffered, you know, something as dramatic and disturbing as being raped. You know, there's really no comparison. But as far as a correlation of having to go in front of your accuser without any preparation, you know, just didn't sit right. So I talked to an attorney friend of mine, and under his advice, I put together a letter to the board saying, I'm happy to do this under these conditions. And those conditions were that there would be a unanimous vote, that there would be no retaliation to me for whatever I said in that meeting. Okay. As long as I kept it civil, and that Troy couldn't come after me later down the road. And they would not do that. They would not make those assurances.
Wow. And so they refused to protect you from retaliation.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
And so I was like, why go there and do that if I have no way to stop Troy or any board member from coming after me later?
Right.
You know, there was literally no protection for me.
So you, and I mean, they could do it. Look, I've had other conversations and people have reached out to me where they feel they've been blacklisted and get put on wait lists and not removed from them or removed from matches, things like that. So it doesn't even have to be direct. It could be just a single board member.
Yeah.
Or a single employee of the org. And I'm not saying, I'm not saying that what they're saying is true. I don't know. I'm just reiterating what people have told me and the concern. Yeah. So your concern is valid based on other things that I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Did they ever offer you to bring in a witness like Luigi Lee, who experienced or witnessed what happened and can attest to what happened?
After I sent that letter, I had to go back to Ted Murphy and say, Ted, you called me and asked me to attend. You said you were going to send me a registration code to come to get in on the board meeting. You know, I sent you my concerns and asked for certain considerations. Are we still on for this? And it took like a day for him to respond back, but finally he said, nope, we're not gonna have you come before the board. And so there was never even a conversation of can I bring a witness or witnesses. Never got that far.
Makes you wonder if they even, and maybe you know more than I do. Cause look, I'm on the outside. I only saw a little bit of what was going on. I was familiar with the situation. And I've referenced in some other things that I've said, but do you know if they even accepted letters or any other type of evidence from other witnesses to the fact?
Another shooter who was on squad with me that day was John Mark. He has become another one of those very vocal voices out there. John Mark is an attorney. John Mark has put together some very, very poignant emails to the board that he has shared on his Facebook page and various section pages. And I know he sent a letter detailing what transpired that day. He shared that with me. It was as accurate as what I had said happened. From what I had heard is that letter was also used in consideration for when they were talking about what sort of discipline action to do with Troy. But obviously my letter and his letter didn't give a lot of weight if he gets to pick when he's going to do his 3-day suspension.
Right.
You know, but yes, there was another letter that was sent, at least one that I know of. I don't know if Luigi, cause he was still in the throes of the election. If he actually did anything in that regard, I can understand if he didn't. You know, politically, it probably wouldn't have been a good move at the time. But, you know, John did send a letter, and I know it was part of the information that was used during that hearing from sources.
Okay. Well, hopefully that's true. I would hope to think that they did. Now, that's what happened last fall.
Mm-hmm.
And now you receive a letter saying they want you to come in front of the disciplinary board for some things you said about employees recently.
Yes. So the first board meeting that they live streamed in January, it was a two-parter. And so I don't remember if it was the first part, the second part, but I learned about the Twitch stream that Bill Godbold was doing, I think you just had him on, did you?
I did.
Okay.
I'm having to re-edit his audio because it's so low. So I'm hoping by the end of the weekend it'll be okay. Out.
Yeah, because I listened to the first one. I didn't listen to the second one because the audio was a little. I was like, I can't hear. You know, and everybody was, you know, chit-chatting and cutting jokes and picking on people on the board and the employees that were in there. And, you know, it was just a bunch of guys doing a bunch of stuff. Okay. I didn't really think anything about it. Again, that was January. That was 4 or 5 months ago, you know, and I've watched a bunch of other things and done a bunch of other things. And I don't recall specifically what comment I made. Okay. But somebody either was in the Twitch session and snitched to the board, or people on the board or the employees went and reviewed the transcripts of what was, you know, and of all the things that were said, I was picked out about something I said about, according to Ben Berry, you know, who's the discipline committee chair, the email that he shared with me, there was, you know, he said there was a comment made about an employee and a board of director and in a sexual nature. And I'm like, dude, I don't remember. Okay. If you say that's what it was. Okay. I honestly don't remember. And you know, I was in the restaurant business, you know, rude, crude, and unacceptable is part of my inbreeding. I can't, you know, I have to really watch my tongue to not, you know, say rude, crude things. And so if I did in and amongst a bunch of, you know, shooters who were all there to, you know, jive on the board, okay, I did, you know, and so because, and that is supposedly is what I'm being called, per Ben Berry, the discipline committee chair and my area director, area six, you know, this is what I'm being brought up to the board for on the April 22nd board meeting.
As you're talking, I did the math in my head. You just took me back to 1977. My fifth grade teacher, who that was her favorite phrase, because she used it on me several times. That is rude, crude, and unacceptable.
Sorry, I gotta quit dating us, man. You gotta realize just how old we really are.
I mean, I'm gonna have to go back and watch the video. My eyes might have gotten as big as saucers when you said that. I'm like, oh my god, it's my fifth grade teacher all over again. You just traumatized me.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. You know?
Oh, that's funny.
Not fine.
I have used that on a few occasions. So to hear you say that was actually pretty funny. Now, so you did not appear back in the fall. And as I understand it, you're not going to appear on this one, correct?
Correct. And I've actually had conversations with a few people. Some people are like, hey, I get why you don't want to. I've had some other people who I respect are like, you know, this is your chance to say your piece, you know? And, but the issue is this is going to be an executive session. All right. Because it's a member discipline situation.
Right.
So the only people that would hear whatever I have to say is going to be board members. Okay.
So
the general public, it's not going to be released in a transcript of the minutes. It's not going to be out there in a recording from a live stream. It's just the board. And, you know, I was talking to, who was it? Maybe Corey Yates, maybe. Oh, no, it was Luigi Lee. He messaged me a couple days ago. So we started running through the board members that are currently seated and where we know that they're probably going to vote. So it didn't take a lot to know that Lighton, Russell, and Ken are going to vote to suspend or ban me. Okay. I'm pretty much given that those three votes are going to be that direction.
I would tend to agree.
Ben has stated in an email that he is going to vote no to not do that. You know, And the highest level of discipline he wants is a written warning. Okay. Frank Rizzi will probably vote with Ben. Okay. Yi Min will abstain unless it's a tie. So that puts it at 3-2 with the new Area 5 director to cast a vote. I don't know who he is. I haven't seen the name yet. I don't, you know. So if he goes with Lightning, Russell, and Ken, and it's 4-2, it's a done deal. If he goes with Ben and Frank, well, it's a tie, and Yi Min has to break the tie. Yi Min, you can't count on his vote. You know, I like the guy personally, but he can be real wishy-washy. He can be, he's shown that he can be influenced one way or the other. So my guess is, you know, even though he suffered a similar fate, you know, in Yi Min version one of his presidency, you know, that he would still go, you know, this, I don't agree with what was said, and I'm going to vote yes. So still puts me in a position where I'm going to be suspended or banned.
Well, there's,
if my voice was going to get out there, my message was going to get out there to other people, you know, to other people in the, who are part of this movement, protest, whatever you want to call it, I would probably go on and make my case. But, you know, there's an old phrase of, you know, pick your battles. And this, to me, is appearing before the board on this issue with the way the board is currently stacked. I just don't see, there's other places I could spend my battle. You know?
Okay.
I just don't see where being on the board, going in front of them, I don't know. I just don't, at this point right now, I don't feel like it's a good use of my brain cells. I am open. I got some time, you know? Somebody might finally convince me otherwise. You might convince me.
All right. Probably not, but two things. One, there is an interim Area 1 director.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Joe.
Jim Boone. Boone. Yeah.
I think Jim is going to vote with Lighten.
You think so? I don't know him. I don't know anything about him, so I can't say one way or the other.
Again, this is some stuff I'm hearing through some sources, but that Bruce Gary has Jim's ear.
So Bruce won.
Yeah, Bruce won.
Okay.
Has Jim's ear.
And I would agree then if that were the case, he tends to lean in agreement with Layton. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably there.
Right. And it's, if you count him in, so that's 4-2. And even if the Area 5 guy votes to, you know, with Ben and them and Yi Min, it's either going to be a tie, which is they need a simple majority, or Yi Min continues to abstain and it's 5-4 or 4-3. Four. And I'm still, the outcome hasn't changed.
Right. You're still SOL.
Yeah. So, you know, and Ben has shared an email to me that, you know, there are members that want to go to a more severe level of discipline.
Members or board members?
Board members.
Okay.
Sorry. Board members.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think there'd be, I'm sure there are some support out there from members who align more on that side, but I think there would be more louder voices on the side.
I misspoke. I meant board members. So,
all right. So I'm curious. Now this is all your opinion and all speculation.
Yes.
But do you think this is a section coordinator protest is why they're doing this? Or is this, do you think, still retaliation from the fall?
My gut is 70-30. 70% section coordinator creating a stir, 30%, well, 60-40, 40% Troy, 60% because I'm a section coordinator, you know, who's very vocal, you know, about the protest. Now, I want to caveat this. even though I'm a session coordinator for the state of Georgia, I have talked to every club, either via email or in person, club leadership and members who shoot various clubs. I've gone around and visited, and I have told every club, you know, regardless of which stance you take, where you decide to fall on this issue, if you want to continue to shoot USPSA matches, you 100% have my support, and I will, you know, support you and help you with whatever I can. If your club decides, has decided, or continues to decide that they want to shoot hit factor matches and don't want to send any money up to the org, then you've got my support on that. You know, some people go, well, you're wishy-washy. No, as a section coordinator, it's really up to the clubs to decide what they want to do. I'm just giving them direction. I'm giving them pointers as to what path this, if you go down this path, this is what you might face. If you go down this path, this is what, you know, you're going to face. And I support all my clubs equally, you know, and so as a section coordinator, you know, I'm still very vocal, probably more vocal than some of the other ones out there. Probably, you know, from what I'm gathering, probably the most vocal section coordinator out there. Number two behind me is Corey Yates from Louisiana, which I find is really ironic because that's where Troy's from. but, you know, and it was never my intention to become this major voice in this thing. Okay. But I knew from what Troy did, and if, you know, and then I started learning about all this stuff that the board is doing, and I was just like, you know, we got to be a voice because we got to get it fixed. I love USPSA. I love the sport. I love the general camaraderie from the shooters and the match directors at the level one clubs and what they do and all the work they put in and the volunteerism. And, you know, and I would hate for, because of board mismanagement, it to go away. It pains me to think that could happen. And so, you know, this, they say it's because I'm a member. They're coming after me because I'm a member. I don't think they would have come after me if it was, I wasn't a section coordinator. I'm just another voice amongst voices. Why? If I wasn't in a position of leadership, then why come after me? There's, you know, there's plenty of other people who said a bunch of other stuff that night. You know, I'm sure if I'd have to go back through the transcripts, but I'm sure I wasn't alone in off-color humor, you know? So why me? I'm a section coordinator. I'm a vocal section coordinator. So I'll let you draw the inference.
Yeah. I mean, you have a position with the organization really. I'm going to use some colorful language because I'll use a phrase my dad used all the time. If you were Joe Shit the Rag Man, they wouldn't care.
Yeah.
So that's how I would term it, because if it was just somebody in another area, we'll throw out, I don't know, any area, pick one, but either way, I feel if there was somebody, I couldn't say me because my podcast does have reach. Mm-hmm. So you're a section coordinator, you have reach. So mm-hmm. they're thinking you're unduly influencing people, more than likely. You know what I mean?
That would be interesting, except that we have, out of 11 clubs in this Georgia section, three of them have continued to shoot USPSA that are Metro Atlanta, which is my stomping ground. Okay. And I just got email from another club that has decided to go back to USPSA. So I have a voice, but obviously not that strong, because if I had that much influence, then you would think all 11 clubs would be lockstep in with what I'm espousing, preaching, whatever word you want to use. Right. That's not the case.
Right. But I think like the same issues Corey is running into, I think it's rearing its head here. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm getting at. But I could also see where this is an opportunity. And I'm not saying it's the case, but I am saying I could see where it would be an opportunity for people to get some payback for the fall. and the posts you made prior to the fall or shared that they didn't like.
Yeah. And I don't put that past them, past the board to, you know, and I think that they're, I think what they're hoping to accomplish, again, this is Mark Stamper opinion, not Mark Stamper section coordinator. This is Mark Stamper, USPSA member, TY25385, you know, CRO. My lowly opinion is that they're hoping that they know they can't do anything with Derek or Ben. They're out. They can have voices.
Yeah, you can't do anything more. You
can't do anything against them anymore. They're, you know, their ban is what their ban is. I guess they could. Derek's on a 5-year ban. I guess they could extend it. I don't know. But, you know, so if they come after me and they ban me, so I guess somewhere in their mind, they're thinking that, well, if we shut him up, he'll stop. If we ban him, he'll stop and he'll go away. And then this will start to die down some more. I don't understand that logic. You know, it's almost, you know, why do they want to make a martyr out of me?
Mark, I've talked to a bunch of people. I mean, I've talked to Area 3 people. I've talked to Area 4, Area, you know, just all over. And I'm going to ask you, all the other clubs, so you say 3 of the 11 shoot USPSA, one's considering going back. Mm-hmm. That leaves 7 more clubs. What would it take the org to do to get those 7 clubs back in and have 100% cooperation?
Boy, talk about teeing me up. I put together a very lengthy letter to the board about how to revamp the leaders, the USPSA leadership. Okay. I think that a lot of these clubs would like to see, and I've shared this with them and I've had several good positive comments on this, but to have an actual board of trustees or a board of directors that was people who were experienced in running a nonprofit organization. Okay. The area directors would still have a position, not as board members, but they could be a board of directors, but they wouldn't be the board of trustees that's actually running the org. Okay. And
that so maybe more like an area coordinator that speaks directly to. Okay.
Right. And the area coordinators would work with, you know, helping organize and promote, you know, section, area, championships, nationals. They would work in that regard. They would work with the rules committee. They would work with NROI to, you know, help move the sport, keep the sport active and along and in direction of that. But the actual day-to-day operation would be this board of trustees. The other thing that, you know, a lot of shooters have come to me and talked about, which I shared in my letter, was that outside of a rule book, some messed up classifiers, and the nationals, we don't really get anything from the org. You know, as a level one club, they're not doing anything to help us, to support us. If we're a new club, they don't do anything. They don't have any sort of plan in place or manual on how to start a club or how to get one off the ground, how to promote. They don't do anything to help promote new clubs in an area. You know, supposedly they have all this money for marketing and everything else, yet they're not helping the local level one clubs, which is where the money comes from. You know, it trickles up. And so a lot of clubs would love to see USPSA board of directors and headquarters be more involved and help the local clubs, you know, especially the smaller clubs, you know, grow. And that's, I think that's one of the biggest things that where a lot of people are upset is they feel like they're not being represented nationwide. They're not being represented and they feel like their money is going to who knows where, La La Land. And they just got nothing for it. And they're finally you know, they're trying to narrow fiddling.
All right. So the board meeting that was where they voted against the live streaming in March.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard about the Twitch. So I figured out where it was going to be. I got on Bill's Twitch page and he was just chatting and talking with people, waiting to find out what was going to happen with the live stream. And we ended up having a little bit of a, you know, I would comment, he would talk, I would type another comment, and we were going back and forth about bylaws and Delaware law and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we discussed was it appears that in the bylaws where it mentions reasons board of directors can be removed, it mentions and in accordance with Delaware law section, I think it's 147K or something like
that. Yeah, that's some of the letters behind 7-7. Yeah.
Well, in there, when Bill got on the internet, when I was asking questions, when he read it, it appeared as though, one, we should be having an annual membership meeting, and two, there should be votes taking place and members can make motions and things get voted on, and that is where you can remove a board member.
Supposedly.
So what are your thoughts on if we had a single nationals? So it'd be kind of like World Shoot, where it's 4 days of shooting. You shoot 3 days, 1 day is in between. You get more shooters in. And during that time, since everybody's going to be there and you know when it's going to be a year ahead of time, you make your annual membership meeting at that match. One, you save money on nationals, and two, you can actually have a membership meeting where members can make motions. What are your thoughts?
Sign me up.
Okay. I like it.
You know, that would be ideal. You know, that's one of the other things that people have talked to me about is, you know, how come we can't vote? You know, how come Area 2 can't go and vote right now? How come, you know, Area 3 can't vote to have Scott put back, you know? And the current bylaws, way they're written, now there was this caveat that you just mentioned about this Delaware, you know, following Delaware law, but the board is very arbitrary in their application of the bylaws and who they apply them to and when they apply them. Okay.
100%.
And so the membership really, from what I'm hearing and what I'm reading, the membership really, us members of USPSA, I keep saying membership like I'm not part of the membership. I am, you know, we want to be able to have the ability to, if they can go nuclear on a member, we want to be able to have the option to go nuclear on a area director. This is a vote of no confidence and we want you removed.
Now, I would like to give a prime example of what you're talking about. I've mentioned it before, but I'm going to keep mentioning it until people are gone and other people are in, so this cannot happen. But Scott Arnberg, mm-hmm. he made a motion to remove Ted Murphy.
Yep.
People flipped their lid, called the motion out of order.
Yep.
Because it wasn't on the agenda.
Yep.
They turned right around. Make a motion to remove him from the finance committee, which was
also out of order,
but not said so. And they voted and removed him off of the committee. If that's not hypocrisy, then I do not know what hypocrisy is.
Dave, I agree, you know, and, you know, then when they removed him, then they 7-7'd him, you know, it was under the auspice of he was the leak. Okay. Whether he was the leak or not, Lighton has already been documented, and there's text logs out there that Lighton was leaking stuff years ago, you know? And again, this goes back to the hypocrisy of, you know what? if people live in glass houses, shouldn't throw stones. You know, the old colloquial phrase.
Yeah.
Right. You know, again, I'm going to date us. You know, most people don't know what that means.
I like it.
You know, but the you know, if don't throw stones at somebody else if you're not willing to fess up to your sins. And it's, you know, again, whether Scott was the leak or not, the fact that fiduciarily, okay, as the finance committee chair, he had an obligation to get certain documents signed so that they, I think it was about moving funds. It was a plethora, it was a large, yes, amount of funds in a couple of accounts. I needed to spread that out in different banks. And Ted had an obligation to sign those documents. Okay.
And did not.
And did not. And would not.
Yes.
Under from what I've read, Ted's excuse was, well, I'm just an interim president. You're still the sitting president. You still have all the rights and authority due the president of USPSA. You should have signed those documents. Scott did the right thing by saying, hey, this, you're not doing this. We need to remove you and have the VP take over that position and sign these documents. Robert's Rules of Order, you know, that was the right thing to do. Probably by Delaware law, that was probably the right thing to do. And then when he put the motion in, putting a freeze on, you know, no raises, no excessive spending, curtailing travel, excessively, you know, really pulling it back, all of a sudden, you know, it's like, you know, going to Congress and the Senate about, in the United States, about term limits. Nope, we're not giving up term. We're not going to give you term limits. You know, all of a sudden now he's out of motion on that too. You know, and that move is what got him outside of the, then they did this thing about the leak, and that's where they had already decided that they were going to find some way to get him out.
Yes, I agree.
Look familiar?
Whether I can't prove that. So that's pure, yeah, speculation on our part.
On our,
yes,
part.
I agree. I believe that was, well, number one, he got in and started asking some hard questions people didn't like about, mm-hmm, finances and stuff. And then he makes that proposal, that motion about Ted. Then he makes the proposal about freezing stuff and doing all that. And they were like, no, 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 we can't have this.
No,
he's, yeah, got,
you're,
to go.
You're upsetting the apple cart.
Yeah.
And
it's, I agree,
you know, and again, speculation, we weren't in the room, you know,
right,
God, at times,
right,
I would love to be a fly on the wall, but it's, you know, it's hard not to put that together. I mean, that's a trail that's pretty easy to follow, you know, same thing with Yeeman version one, you know, say what you want, but in my opinion, you know, somewhere, somehow, somebody put a bug in Troy's ear that only way we're going to get rid of Yeeman is to pull his card so he doesn't meet the requirements and we can have him removed. In my heart of hearts, I feel that was a hit job.
Well, I do know Yeeman version one. He asked a bunch of hard questions like Scott was.
Yep.
Upset the apple cart. So, yep, when you have we'll call it a disciplinary board, because he kind of had one when the rangemasters came together and investigated that incident with him, and they, yeah, made a recommendation to Troy, and then, mm-hmm, Troy overrides that recommendation and goes much more severe, mm-hmm, by removing his RO card, mm-hmm, and then the board votes him out. I do feel like there's something there. Like, why would you not follow the range? You had three rangemasters who did the investigation, and they did not come to the same conclusion that Troy did. Why?
Right. Right. And I learned through some of my RO friends that the some of the ROs that were questioned by the RMs later, and this was after, like, Troy said, hey, we were going to run this investigation, we need your statement, and kind of coaxed. Again, this is what I'm hearing. I can't verify it 100%. But, you know, said, so we need to have these sort of statements made. And then they later recanted those statements, saying that was not what happened. We were somewhat coerced into this.
Hmm.
Again, goes back, again, supposition on my part. But, you know, Troy is Troy, and he's probably going to hear this, and, you know, I'm never, ever going to RO in Nationals again. but so be it. It's, you know, again, it's one of those things, like with Scott, you can't help but put the pieces together and come to this conclusion. It's kind of hard not to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, I feel they need to reinstate Scott. They need to just swallow their pride, mm-hmm. reinstate Scott squad. Wow. Scott, that will bring most of Area 3 back. I think there are some people that may already be lost forever.
Yeah.
But it would definitely help with other areas.
Yeah. Here's what I find interesting. Since Georgia section has, the Metro Atlanta clubs have been running hit factor matches, especially the two largest outdoor matches have been running hit factor matches. Attendance has actually not dropped off, you know? So the fact that they're not running classifiers, they're not running official. I mean, they were running USPSA rules, but it's not advertised as a USPSA match because as a hit factor, you can't do that. But it's amazing how all, you know, the club that I'm associated with right now, GPSL, you know, is selling out. People are just wanting to shoot, and they're willing to, they're going, look, we just want to shoot. We don't care if it's a hit factor match or a USPSA, which actually bodes bad for USPSA.
Right.
Because if people are willing to shoot, whether it's affiliated with USPSA or not, you know, okay. Why go back?
Well, why go back when it's filling your coffers more than it was before?
Yeah. Trust me, I'm the treasurer of GPSL. I've seen a marked climb since January in the monies that are in the account.
You're not the only one I've heard that from.
And, you know, a lot of clubs are going, hey, you know, we've been needing to buy more steel. This, you know, steel we have is worn out. Well, now they have money to go buy new steel. They didn't have before. You know, right. They're right now, USPSA is not giving any incentive to come back. If anything, they're doubling down and getting people and clubs to go, we don't need them. We don't need it. You know, really? I'm happy. You know, now there are some people who want to shoot, want to get their M class, their GM, whatever. You know, they want to chase the classifiers. Great. There's still clubs out there that are running classifiers. You can go to those clubs, drive to them, fly to them, whatever you want. Go get your classifiers, you know. But there's a lot of clubs that are shooting hit factor and selling out. So there's no incentive. USPSA is not offering any incentive to come back right now.
They're throwing gas on a fire is what they're doing.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's kind of sad. I mean, look. I am not one of those burn it down right after I say they're throwing gas on the fire. But something has to change. I mean, I want the USPSA to continue to thrive, to grow. And I don't mean just, oh, let's grow in numbers, but not activity. I mean, activity.
Yeah.
With numbers, you know, mm-hmm. I enjoy the sport. When I found it, I was like, man, this is fantastic. I love this stuff. I created a podcast because of it. So
yeah.
I don't want it to go away. I enjoy this. So I just want to see some realistic changes that make the organization better, which will in turn make the sport mm-hmm. better.
You know, and what's the old phrase? Those who don't learn from history are destined to repeat it. You know,
doomed to repeat it. Yeah,
are doomed to repeat it. And USPSA, and let me throw another colloquialism out there. You know, sometimes you got to take the house down to the foundation to build it back better. God, that sounded like Biden. Please don't. Let me rephrase that. Oh, my God. I am sorry.
So what you mean is you got to drain the swamp.
Yes. Yes. You have to drain. Wow. Wow.
I got you.
But, you know, in any business that is not willing to look at its model and go, we're stagnant and we need to do some changes. You know, whatever those changes need to look like, whether it's bylaw changes, business operation changes, marketing, advertising, all the above, you know, if you're not willing to do that on a periodic basis, you will die. A business will close. You know, I was in the restaurant business for 30 something years. Trust me, I've seen it happen time and time again. Business restaurants that have been around for decades don't make some small changes that the public is looking for, and then they're, you know, an icon in the restaurant community is gone after 20 years. Well, it's because they chose not to change, you know, not to
be smart. I just put out today an episode that I had recorded with Virginia Jo Dunlap.
Yeah, I want to watch that. I saw that.
And she talks about strategic planning. So we have a whole section about strategic planning. And I was like, you know, first time I've heard of that for the organization. And as far as I know, they've never had one.
That's because you got a bunch of area directors, you know, who are great match directors and can build a match and can do a stage and can run a, you know, a section or whatever. But they, most of them do not have any business acumen background in running large organizations or nonprofits.
That's why I voted for Vince Lucchetti of Area 8.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of board experience. He was a mayor of a town. I mean,
that's what we need.
You need people. Look, and you don't need everybody to be like that, but you need some people like Dan Click. I heard is a partner in an accounting firm. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you had Vince on there, if you had Dan on there, if Scott was on there, now you're, and then keep Ben on there. Now you're getting a good, well-rounded group of people who could do what was necessary for the org.
Yes. Yes. And Virginia, she should, again, this goes to the not wanting to rock the boat. Don't steal the good thing that we have. You know, she should have been on that bylaws committee.
100%.
Hands down. You know, the fact that she wasn't is a travesty.
She sent me her application and her resume, and I was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't fabricate something better than what she sent me.
Mm-hmm. I believe it. I mean, I've heard nothing but great things about her. I have not met her. I don't know her personally, but everybody I know who's talked about her has said nothing but great things, and she would have been a phenomenal addition to the bylaws committee.
Hurt feelings. Sometimes hurt feelings get in the way.
Yeah. Pride's an ugly thing.
It is. It's about time people swallow some pride, get some people back on the board.
Yeah.
Invite her onto the bylaws committee. And I mean, she's been a practicing attorney for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is what she does. Nonprofits board. She just got off as the president of a nonprofit board, but she's still on the board as the past president to help with the board and to continue going. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is
She's done strategic planning. She's mm-hmm. written bylaws. She understands bylaws from a legal standpoint. And she talked about, we have too many things in the bylaws that could be policy and not bylaw, you know?
It's I can agree with that.
Okay.
I've read the bylaws 3 or 4 times, and there's parts in there that I'm going, why is this supposed to be, why is this a governing item instead of just a policy? Didn't make sense, you know?
Right.
And, but yeah, it's a very sad thing that she's wasn't part of that, you know?
Agree. Well, Mark, I feel like we covered the topics pretty well tonight. Was there anything else you wanted to add to this?
No, what I want to add is I want to thank you for allowing me to have a voice on your podcast. I really appreciate that. You didn't have to, you could have, you know, and I appreciate you extending the invitation and allowing me to come on and share not only what's going on with me personally, you know, in the org, but also, you know, what my rallying cry is. You know, I stand by my decisions. I stand by the things I've said and the positions I've taken. And, you know, if this is what the end result is me not being able to shoot, you know, officially USPSA, then that's the hill I'm willing to die on. And it doesn't mean I'm going to stop, but I do truly thank you for allowing me to be on your podcast.
Well, and I do appreciate the fact that when I sent the invite, you reached back out as quickly as you did. And we were able to set this up because this is going to be, I will edit it, make sure everything's good and put it out tomorrow.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. And you have a good evening.
You too.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.